Ladies and gentlemen, it's a Pasturbrus Cadpost with a mock. Put my teeth
use in. That one. Please use that one.
And ladies and gentlemen, my name is Christian Corley. I am the editor of Casturbus.com. With me this week is James McLean. He's here. You can hear him. Listen, he's in my mobile phone. And also is Brian Turnover. Hello, Brian.
Hey, that's me.
That's
I'm
you.
Not in your phone.
You're not in my phone. James, James can't make it this week. He tweets, as a podcasting pro, managed to lock myself out of my email and Skype account while out of the house. Lost my digital keys.
Whoops.
Yeah. Don't know where the butcher is. I don't know where the butcher is. I also don't know where his butler is, but he's not playing out this week. James McLean. That's what we used to do. You wouldn't have done this. Probably been an American. You probably had a different turn of phrase. But when we were kids, we would knock on our friends' doors and say, are you playing out?
No, what does that mean?
Just coming outside to play.
Oh, is that what it, yeah, okay. Yeah, we would have phrased it slightly differently.
How would you have said it? Are you coming outside to play?
Are you coming outside to play?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Okay. So, hey, what did you do at the weekend?
Yeah, what did I do at the weekend?
Yeah.
I went out to a show. I saw my brother's band play, actually.
Okay. What are they called?
And Go Commando.
Okay, I'm just going to stop you there. If the listener might be able to hear a giant scratching sound. I can definitely hear it. Just we have neighbours at Castover's Towers, and they're doing some sort of home improvement. It isn't a giant rat, so that's basically what I wanted to say there. I do apologise for interrupting, Brian. We sort of got a little bit confused there. So you went to see your brother's band play, and they're called Go Commando.
Yes,
that's a very cool name.
Oh, good. I'm glad you think so. yeah, they're a cover band. They cover like all the hits from like the 60s up to today. So they play a lot of shows locally, bars, weddings, First Fridays, which I don't know if you guys have First Fridays over there.
No, never heard of it.
No. First Fridays are like the first Friday of the month.
Well, of course
areas.
We have those. We have the same months as you do.
Get out. You have those?
Yeah.
I didn't think that was, I bought a British calendar one time and I just didn't believe it. I thought it was made in America or something, Doctor Who, what's that all about? But no, the first Friday of every month, generally in the warmer weather, certain areas, certain cities or boroughs or so on will do what's called a First Friday, where basically they have a festival.
Right.
To basically kind of help bring attention and people to the local businesses in that area.
Right.
So they'll bring out lots of bands, solo musicians, artists, any kind of performing arts kind of thing and so on. So this one was in Phoenixville, which is about 20 minutes from me. And they seem to like their band pretty much because the past few years they had them headlining it, which is very cool. So
all right.
They're a fun time.
So, bands get paid for these events?
They do. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Even better.
Nice.
Okay. I was at the Kapow event. For a short time on Saturday in Stockton-on-Tees, where you've been to Stockton for the Dimensions convention.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to be have a table at the event, and would have been flogging some copies of Ultimate Regeneration, and maybe one or two, and I say one or two copies of Dalek Masterplan, and I would have had some special postcards which I'd had made. Unfortunately, the postcards didn't come, and I kind of felt that without having anything new to offer, rather than flogging the same old book that I was, it's 5 years old now, Ultimate Regeneration, I opted not to take my table, basically. So Kerry, the twins and myself, we went down to the event and had a look around, and there was Sylvester McCoy was there, John Levine, and Terry Molloy, they were all in attendance as guests, and I caught a glimpse of John Levine doing photos. I also had a chat with Bob Fisher, who was the guy who interviewed me and produced the TARDIS on Teesside documentary on BBC Radio Christmas Before Last, which I was on.
Thanks.
He was doing the interviewing on stage. I saw Dean Wilkinson as well, who's a writer friend of mine who interviewed on one of the three cult casts that we've done. Now, as luck would have it, the postcards I ordered from a company called, and this will make you chuckle, Overnight Prince.
Yes, it does.
And they arrived today, having been ordered on Sunday last week. And so here they are. You can hear them. Don't know if you can hear that.
Oh, yeah.
That's my 50 postcards, which I'm slightly aggrieved about that they didn't arrive on time. I now have 50 postcards that I really don't know what to do with. That's obviously amusing. And I was also aggrieved to find that Dean Wilkinson, now Dean writes a lot of TV here and abroad, and he's done some CBeebies recently, and he also does kind of rude stuff, shall we say. And there's this thing that he does. I'm going to give it a mention because he's getting a bit frustrated that he's not getting a lot of followers on Twitter for this, and it is really worth following. It's called Swear Lot Holmes, and it's basically a potty mouthed Sherlock Holmes.
You don't say.
I do, and it's actually very funny. And he told me while I was having a chat with him that he had some postcards made along similar lines, but he had 250 done for about £5 less than what I paid, done locally in Middlesbrough. So, I mean, that's like 8 miles from my house. So I'm really annoyed by the whole postcard scenario now. But I have one of these postcards, and what I'm going to do while we're talking, Brian, before we move on to our comedy themed podcast, so it's coincidental that I should mention Dean being a comedy writer. What I'm going to do, I'm just going to put one of these postcards on Instagram for our readers, our listener, I should say. Oh, there's a zygon on a strange place to see a zygon. We'll come to that back to that in a moment. So there it is. It's going on Instagram now, and basically this postcard's got a QR code on it. So if you're able to see this QR code, dear listener, if your camera is able to read it, you can get some. You basically get the three issues of Casterbridge magazine that we did. That includes the preview and Ultimate Regeneration in PDF format. That's basically what I was giving away, or planning to give away, maybe, on Saturday. But sadly, it didn't happen. But these things happen. What can you do? You tell me, Brian, what can you do?
I can just look at them online when you post them there. How's that?
Okay, well, you just roll with it. That's what you do,
I
don't you?
will, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally. Just roll with it. That goes on to Instagram. So now this week we don't have James here, sadly, as you know, because he's locked out of his house, which is very amusing. But obviously we hope that he's safe and well, and that he has a sizable porch in case it rains. So Brian and I are going to be talking about spoof Doctor Who's, really, aren't we?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Now we're
The
going to be,
specific ones.
specific ones. There's some that we're not going to be talking about. We're not going to be, for instance, we're not doing the Lenny Henry one, or the or like sketches or anything like that. We're specifically going to have a chat about the Curse of the Fatal Death. The Pitch of Fear, the Web of Caves, and now what's the other one? Is it just called Kidnapped? The other one.
I think it's called The
Oh,
Kidnap.
the Kidnap. Okay.
Or the kidnappers, for some reason now I can't remember. But yeah, it's just simple like that.
Now, these all the last three, they were from 2003, weren't they?
The last three, no, they were 99,
Were they
because
99?
they were aired on that A Night with Doctor Who on the BBC,
Oh,
I
was
think
that
is
in
what it was called.
1999? I thought it was in
Yeah.
2003 for some reason.
Because they aired the TV movie as part of that.
They
And I
did.
remember that was where I first had gotten a copy of the TV movie here in the US that did not have my commercial break edits,
Right.
because I had a friend in the UK who had copied. I don't remember if it was on VHS or DVD at the time, but he had copied for me pretty much the whole night of Doctor Who. Not like the episodes, because I had most of the episodes, but he copied like the Tom Baker breaks, the TV movie, because I did need that, and then these three sketches as well.
Okay, so that was 1999. Now I remember that event. I didn't think it was 99, but I
Yeah.
suppose if I adjust myself geographically and socially, then
Yeah, here
yes,
we
it
go.
probably.
BBC Two's Doctor Who Night in. 1999. That's what it says for this sketch, which is called The Kidnappers.
The Kidnappers, right. And it was all linked together by Tom Baker as well, if I recall.
Yeah, wearing like a black version of his outfit with a white scarf.
Yes, and I think in his introduction for the TV movie, he says something like, in this one, I'm called Paul McGann.
Yeah.
Obviously, typically barmy. So, where are we going to start? We're going to start with those three, or we're going to start with Curse? Which, now, was Curse the same year?
No, Curse. God, when was Curse?
Curse must have been the year before then.
You think?
Yeah, because I was working in a particular pub, and when Curse was on Comic Relief Night. So it would have had to have been the same year or the year before.
Oh, you know what? It's the same year.
Same year. There you go. Yeah.
Wow. Geez, I didn't realize they were all in the same year. Interesting. A good selection then. We chose from the same kind of group. I'm happy to start anywhere. I mean, we were already on the three little sketches from.
Okay. Well, let's start with three little sketches. Are you supposed to watch them in any particular order? Do you think?
I don't think so, because they're not connected.
No.
So I don't think it matters.
Well, they are connected in a way, aren't they?
Well, in the fact that they're Doctor Who themed? Oh, no, well, yes.
The cast, because they're all Mark Gatiss and David Walliams, aren't they?
Yes. Mark Gatiss, yeah. And they were written by both of them, or they were written by Mark and...
Now, it does say on Wikipedia that Gatiss wrote and performed in the comedy spoof sketches Web of Caves, The Kidnappers, and The Pitch of Fear with David Walliams. So I think we can assume that they wrote them together, performed them together. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's do The Pitch of Fear, since that is technically, in their version, the beginnings of Doctor Who.
Okay, yes. in which a man with long hair, played kind of 1960s OTT long hair, and completely unsuitable for the period of the 1960s when it would have been, played by David Walliams, is apparently Sidney Newman, and he goes into an office to speak to Mark Gatiss' character. I'm not entirely sure who he's supposed to be.
According to the sign on the door, he is Mr. Barusa.
Mr. Barusa, that's right, yeah. who pitches an idea for Doctor Who, which, when asked how long it'll run, he says about, he ums and ahs and says 26 years.
Yeah. It was funny to me because, I mean, like, if you know the actual history, the actual background of the show, just how they played with the ideas, like to think that they could have actually had a meeting where they were like, 26 years, this thing will run. And you know, talk about their costumes when he's like, you know, question marks on the lapels later on. You know, we want to get the costumes right. But like, what did he say? We want to get the costumes right for the first
18,
12 years or something like that.
Years, I think. 18, yeah. I think, yeah.
You know, and I understand they went a little too far with this skit, actually, as well, when they were talking about the actors. But
yeah, well, the version I saw, because I checked it out on YouTube earlier to refresh my memory, and the version I saw didn't have that bit in it.
Yeah, well, that's the version on the DVDs don't have that in. That was removed for when they released it for, like, home video.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when it aired that night, apparently, and I don't know if this is still true, but apparently Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy won't talk to Mark Gatiss anymore. They wouldn't work with him and so on. That aside, it's really funny. I mean, especially the bit where they come up with the theme tune.
Yes.
That was like almost Monty Python ridiculous. I would give that moment, at least, not the whole skit, but that moment for some reason. Because even if it wasn't about coming up with a theme tune, it would have been something that they did that had no explanation whatsoever. Like, this one is less Monty Python because it had an explanation. They were coming up with a theme tune, but it was just so off the wall. You know, the whole way it came together. And it sounded good, too. Like, I almost want to use it now for the podcast.
It is. I mean, it is good. It is kind of how they just arranged that bit. It does work very, very well. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, to think it all out, like, you know, the tapping of the fingers on the desk for part of it, you know, then ending, like, to end the 80s version of the theme anyway. With Mark Gatiss drinking his alcohol there, his beverage, whatever it was, and it's too ridiculous. Like, who knows? I mean, part of me wants to think they came up with the whole skit because they did that one day by accident. They were just hanging out and they did the theme tune like that and said, "Hey, we could do something with this."
Quite possibly, it wouldn't surprise me. That's often how things sort of develop, isn't it? So, Yeah, it's a nice little romantic idea. Yes, I do that. Yes, yeah. So that's a lot of fun. The picture fear. I wonder whether when we get to the end, maybe we can sort of decide which one is our favourite. But until we do get that far, I'm quite fond of the kidnappers, I have to say.
Yes.
In which Mark, a character called Mark, played by Mark Gatiss, is awoken from his sleep by a character called David, played by David Williams, who has brought him a human-sized present, which is Peter Davison with a bag on his head and some tape over his mouth. And it's a nice satire on fan ownership in there as well in the dialogue, which I really like.
Yeah.
But I think what really sells it is Peter Davison's reactions all the way through.
Absolutely.
Just brilliant.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, number one, that they actually got him to do it, that he was up for it. But number two, I mean, he's duct tape, his mouth is duct tape closed, and all you have to go on are his eyes and his body language, and you get it all. It's hilarious. It's so well played. Go on.
I was going to say the bit where it's first apparent is when Mark asks if he can sign his get his autograph or
Yeah.
something like that, and he said, "Well, not really, because he's going to think you're some sort of lunatic." And then Peter Davison looks at David Williams.
Yeah.
It's clear who the lunatic is. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't shout his name like he's a thing. Peter is a guest in our home. Come on. Yeah. I do like what he's trying to make him guess too, and he's like telling him, he can put. He wait, his credits include All Creatures Great and Small and Doctor Who, Robert Hardy. And like, really, that's your first guess? Okay.
Oh yes, it's really good.
Yeah, some good direction in that too. Like when Mark Gatiss wants to take a photo with him, and David Williams is taking it, he goes even crazy on the camera, and there's just that like kind of montage-y kind of scene of him taking the photos, Peter's awkward face, Mark's awkward face, like it was a good set too, the way they dressed that thing, pretty much the way most fans at homes probably do look.
He means you,
lots of
listener.
good sci-fi references in those scenes too, I should say. Lots of good stuff.
The kidnappers is a lot of fun. It's quite dark as well.
Oh yeah.
So it's not suitable for younger listeners or
And the
viewers.
ending, every time I show that to somebody, first of all, every time I show these three sketches to anybody, they love them. Any Doctor Who fans just go nuts for them. But the ending of that one never fails to get a reaction.
What's the reaction usually?
Well, it's a range of, oh my God, to just complete hilarity. But it's usually combined. It's usually both of them like in a row. It's just great. Great.
I must confess, I've never, it's never occurred to me to show them to anybody.
Oh no.
No.
You know what? It's funny. Usually when I meet a new Doctor Who fan or just any friends I know that are into them and we're just hanging out one day, I'm like, have you ever seen them? Because most people don't. Because what they got to remember is they didn't air here.
No.
So for you to show them to friends, I mean, I'm sure there's some over there that have not seen them, of course, but if you're a Doctor Who fan of that era, like we are, you probably would have seen them. But here they didn't air, but they did get put on one of the DVD box sets as extras. And I can't recall which one. I think it might be the Beginnings box set. I should look that up in case anybody wants to see them on the DVDs. But most people just don't know about them here. So I love showing them to people because it's a lot of fun. They all three of them, like I said, get a great reaction. As a matter of fact, I just showed them maybe like a month or two to a couple of friends, along with we're also going to talk about as well, Curse of the Fatal Death, and they love them all. I wish there was more like this. I know you guys get a lot of like Doctor Who spoof skits over there on like certain shows because I know we said we weren't going to talk about them all, but in some ways I wish there were more like these because they're really well done and they're all with the exception of that one line like we said that got cut out, they're all very respectful of it in a sense,
The Web of Caves is basically a police box in a quarry with Mark Gatiss dressed up as a sort of Pertwee-esque Doctor and David Williams looking a bit Mervellan-esque.
Yeah. And they shot it in black and white too to give it that kind of 60s feel.
Yeah. It's this is the only one that I really remembered from the night.
Oh, really?
Hmm. So I do wonder whether I might have been drinking while I was watching the TV that evening.
Gotcha.
It's possibly the least amusing of the three, I think, as well. I'm not saying it's not funny or anything. I think they get better as you go on.
Yeah, I have to admit, I really like this one, and I think it's because of the stylistic choice they went with, and certainly like how they made the monsters look. But I think part of the other thing that really there's two standout moments in this one for me, and one of them is when the aliens come to the door, they come to the TARDIS door, and you know the premise of this one is the aliens are trying to basically get the Doctor to stop them from doing an evil plot to this planet
that they haven't thought of yet.
Yeah, that they haven't thought of yet. Not because they're evil, just because they think it's fun. Like, this is what we do. He stops aliens. We're aliens. We should do this. It'll be fun. Mm-hmm. And like, so they're there kind of like buddies, kind of like almost like we would as Doctor Who fans go up to the actors and go, hey, okay, for this photo, can you pretend you're stopping me? You know, like you just want to be a part of the show so bad. But I love it. Like when they have to find the right voice to talk to him, you know, they can't just sit like, you know, he tries all these different voices till he finally gets the classic like Doctor.
And Doctor.
And you see that Mark Gatiss like really like terrified by that. But then as he leaves, they're like, oh, he's nice, isn't he? He's so nice. You know? But my absolute favorite part though is, and I think that this moment could actually work in the actual show, to be honest. But he realizes, okay, these guys are crazy. I'm getting the hell out of here. Dematerializes the TARDIS. It rematerializes about 10 feet away.
Yeah.
And he steps out the doors and he's like, where have you brought me to this time, old girl? And then he sees him, woo, hello. And then he's like, oh, he realizes his mistake that he didn't go anywhere aside from like 10 feet. But I can totally see that happening as a joke in the actual actual show, not as him trying to escape like a bad guy or something, but maybe like trying to leave the companion and it just appears like right behind them or something like that. But I thought it was hilarious. I mean, I agree it's maybe like the least funny of the three, but those two moments, they just get me.
I do like the bit where he opens the door the second, I think it's the second time.
Oh, which, yeah.
It's not the first time. Then he shouts back in the tower, he says, it's for me.
Yes, he's got a cup of tea in his hand.
Yeah.
I do like that. Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like absolute hilarity, but it was really just,
I mean, they're all
they're all
charming and well written, aren't they?
Yeah,
clearly affectionate. Yeah.
So, and it's great, and you know, obviously, who doesn't have that dream to play the Doctor one day? So good for him for getting that chance in for himself there. Of course, now he's played the Doctor and the Master because he plays the Master in some big Finnish plays.
Sympathy for the Devil.
Yes,
he's the Master, isn't he?
Yes, he's good too.
Credited as Sam Kisgaard. I like Sympathy for the Devil.
Yeah, it's a very good story.
It's one of the few big finishes that I've really listened to. I like everything. The whole concept's excellent. I really like it.
Yeah. Sympathy for the Devil it's a great story, number one. But your enjoyment factor of that story shoots way up if you know the Pertwee era at all.
Yeah.
You know, it really relies on that, and it's really well done, really well played. All round, too, even having David Warner play the Doctor. That's something I wanted to see more of. So good.
Yeah, they only did two, didn't they?
Yeah.
What was the second one called?
It was Dalek related. I want to say War of the Daleks, but that could be wrong. I don't know why I'm doing this. I have it right in my iTunes. I should just look. Here we go.
This is one of those bits you need to cut out.
Yeah, sorry.
Is it Old Mortality? No,
nope,
it's not.
Masters,
no, it's Masters
of War.
Masters of War. No, is that Daleks?
It is. It's Daleks and Davros.
Is that Genesis of the Daleks then, essentially?
No. It's,
no? Okay.
They end up on a planet that's kind of like subjugated by the Daleks. If anything, it's kind of almost more like a merging of the Dalek invasion of Earth and perhaps Genesis of the Daleks because Davros is there, but it's not really like the birth of the Daleks, but it's also not really the Earth, because it is an alien planet that they land on. But
Without
it's kind of
spoiling
taking that
anything,
theme. Yeah.
is there anything in that story which makes it explains why they didn't do another one?
No, not really.
Right.
They are left with a bit of a different situation at the end. I will say that. So it could actually theoretically still even go on right now. I will
Right.
say that.
Right. Okay.
But no, it's a shame because I think they pretty much scrapped their Unbound series. I don't think they're doing any of those anymore at
That's a
all.
shame, really.
It is. It really is. There's so much freedom in that.
Because
And
I really like Sympathy for the Devil. And Tennant's in that as well, isn't he?
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and their Unbound range, honestly, I think all of the stories were really good. They had not only did they have a lot of freedom with the stories just because the Doctor could be free of continuity, but they had a lot of freedom of the types of stories they could tell and how far they could go with their stories, not just in a serious nature or a dramatic way, but also with a comedic tone and so on. So every one of them kind of had a very different feel and a very different interest level to the story. Yeah, I would definitely recommend a lot of the Unbound stories. I don't think there was, I can't remember the name of it, but I think there was maybe one that I wasn't really taken with, but the rest were really interesting. There was even one. I don't remember the doctor's actual situation. I think he may have gone a bit power mad. But and this will probably spoil something for somebody, but I feel it's a good moment to mention. But they're trying to kill the doctor, and they just keep shooting him, and he just keeps regenerating. And it's something that you can't get in the show. It won't happen in the show because how could you do that? You'd go through so many doctors, the fans would be upset. But in this Unbound story, it's something that could happen to the doctor, and here is a way that you can finally tell it. And it's kind of creepy as well, considering what lengths he was willing to go for what he was doing. So. Yeah, it was a really interesting idea, very, very cool concept that I would love to see revisited again because there are so many actors out there that would be ripe for the role.
I think I'm just looking at this. I think I've heard Full Fathom 5, and I've definitely heard Deadline.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So I haven't heard the Jeffrey Belden ones or the Michael Jayston one.
Deadline might be the one that I wasn't taken with. Full Fathom 5 may be the one I was just mentioning, though.
Right.
I can't remember Deadline now, which I think is the reason why I'm thinking it's the one I'm not that taken
Well,
with.
Full Fathom 5, I listened to in the car or on a train, one of the two, travelling from Manchester to back over this side of the country or on my way there, which is, I think I missed the end of it, but I do remember quite a bit of it. But obviously, these aren't comedy, so it's interesting that we've got
Sure,
onto
yeah.
these. There is another alternative Doctor, though, isn't there?
Quite a few of them.
Quite a few Ninth Doctors.
Yes.
As we've talked about previously on the podcast, there's obviously the real Ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston, who isn't the real Ninth Doctor because John Hurt is the real Ninth Doctor. We have obviously discussed that at length in the past, so we're not going to go into that too much. Then you've got Richard E. Grant's Doctor from the Scream of the Shalka. And prior to that, by 4 years, you've got Rowan Atkinson's daughter. Doctor, even. Don't know where that came from. You got Rowan Atkinson's Doctor in Stephen Moffat's The Curse of the Fatal Death, which was a comic relief show, a special for comic relief in 1999, and features Jonathan Pryce as the Master, has some Daleks in it, and Julie Sawalha of Absolutely Fabulous and Press Gang, significantly, which is also by Stephen Moffat, as the Doctor's companion and fiance, which there's a lot of foreshadowing in Curse of the Fatal Death, isn't there, for Stephen Moffat's era of Doctor Who?
Yeah, it does seem that way very much.
There's a partially transgendered master as well,
Yes.
with a strategically placed etheric beam locators. It is very funny, though, isn't it? I think it's largely to do with the kind of Blackadder-esque performance from Atkinson.
Yeah, and that was a role he'd always wanted. He was a big Doctor Who fan. He wanted to play him, and this was the chance that he got. I thought he was great. I don't know how it would have been to have him in the real show, but I always say this about actors. When people talk about they can't be musicians as well, or this, that, and the other, and like when people have talent for the arts, it's talent for the arts. They're not just a comedy actor. This man can do serious acting too, And with the doctor, you got to have a little bit of comedy in there. I think he probably would have been really cool. I'm curious to see how he would have played it had it not been a comedy. I guess I will say that. But I thought he was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm just looking here. This was the first time the Mill was involved in Doctor Who as well.
Really?
Yeah, they did post-production work on it. And I should also just specify, we kind of get into this habit of calling it The Curse of the Fatal Death, but it's not called The Curse of the Fatal Death. It's called The Curse of Fatal Death.
Yes, right. Yes.
So, yeah, that's the only BBC commissioned live-action Doctor Who production between the Paul McGann movie and Rose. I'm not sure how significant that is, but what is interesting is it was executive produced by Richard Curtis.
It's also quite oddly said by Ian Levine to have been treated as proper Doctor Who. He said they were, quote, making proper Doctor Who. This was not a comedy. It was not a spoof. It was a continuation. I can't see that as true.
No, well,
Just
maybe someone said it to him.
maybe. Yes.
As that was being the case then, because the same thing was said of the Scream of the Shalka.
Which, in fairness, it seemed more likely with that one, since the show had no chance at that time that we knew of coming back to TV. But this, and then there's differences. Like, they treated that one serious. This one was clearly a joke through and through. This one, I just can't see it that way. Oh, it's
No.
also produced by his wife, Moffat's wife.
Yeah, a lot of things he does are produced by
Oh
Suvirtue.
my God, it was directed by John Henderson. I have a friend named John Henderson.
Okay, it's probably not the
That
same
was weird
guy.
to see him there. No, it's not him,
No, I
but
didn't think
I'm
so.
going to pretend it is from now on.
Okay. It's also the final appearance by Roy Skelton as a Dalek.
Wow, really?
Yeah,
That I
but
didn't know.
the other thing is, there's obviously a 10th Doctor in this one, played by Richard E. Grant, just to confuse people who are fans of The Scream of the Shalka.
Where he played the Ninth Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is described as a parody, and there's fart jokes in there. There's timey-wimey jokes in there. There's the whole sequence with the master falling through a trapdoor and having to wander through some sewers and then travelling through time to get back to his confrontation with the doctor. It plays around with the Doctor Who tropes and time travel themes basically, and makes m and f for comedy effect, and it works very well all the way through. Oh, and it has the Tom Baker era theme tune as well, doesn't it?
Yes, does it?
It does, yeah.
Why do I remember it? Oh, I'm thinking of Dimensions in Time.
No, not that. No, not that. Don't mention that.
Yeah, sorry. Moving on.
flashback there. Ooh. And obviously it ends well. It goes through several doctors. There's Richard D. Grant. There's Jim Broadbent. There's Hugh Grant, and then it ends with a switch in gender. Again, with the doctor played by Joanna Lumley.
So it's all of Moffat's era wrapped up in one comedy, it seems.
Yeah,
It
amazing.
is funny because I'll tell you one thing I absolutely love that we usually talk about. I love when stories will do like time bending things where they keep folding back in on themselves, or like the way this comedy did it. The master would spring a trap and the doctor would say, "Well, I went back and I had lunch with the designer of this building and I
Yeah.
foresaw you're doing this,"
Yeah.
kind of stuff,
Well,
which,
it's the Time Monster, isn't it? It's totally riffing on what happened in the Time Monster.
yeah. But it's like you ordinarily wouldn't get that in Doctor Who, because ordinarily the TARDIS brings you somewhere, and then either situation reason you can't use the TARDIS because it's the wrong thing to do to go back and retread on your
Yeah.
footsteps, or you can't get to the TARDIS. So this was really like playing on just the time travel theme very heavily, and like kind of what you shouldn't do in the show kind of thing. But it works here because there's this ridiculous rivalry between the doctor and the master, which really just gets played out so heavily here. But it's so funny. And Jonathan Pryce, Again, he's a guy, I think, had he played the master on TV properly, he probably would have been brilliant.
Oh, he'd have
But
killed
playing
it.
it here, he
He'd
was
have
great.
absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, he played a great comedic version. He played great look. Just great. That man just has a great look and a great voice, period. But
Jonathan Pryce is in Game of Thrones at the moment,
oh, is he? Yeah, seems very fitting for that.
as a kind of insidious sort of religious leader. He's very, very good in that. Do you know who I think? I was just reading this here. Hugh Grant was offered the role of the Doctor again ahead of Christopher Eccleston, as we know, and later said publicly that he regretted dismissing it without much thought when he saw how good the series was, and that he was hoping to play a villain in the ongoing programme instead. I think Hugh Grant would make quite a good master, actually.
A master, really?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Because you're not going to. It's Hugh Grant. You're not going to expect him to turn evil.
Yeah.
No one's going to expect Hugh Grant to be evil.
I do actually. I like that a lot when they cast people in ways that you ordinarily wouldn't see them, especially when they pull it off tremendously. For instance, Hugh Laurie with House.
Yeah.
I just never would have pictured Hugh Laurie in a role like that, and he nailed it. So Hugh Grant, that'd be very interesting actually now to see what he could do with a villain.
Me too, me too. So,
Yeah.
no,
So he
I've.
gets.
Off no, go on,
Go on.
sorry.
I was just going to say, so he gets offered the role of the Doctor after having already played the Doctor yet again here in this
Yes,
era. Yeah.
yes. I mean, I have. I find it very difficult to choose between these four because we said earlier let's kind of decide which of these is the best. But I am struggling to pick a clear winner because I think they're all very funny in their own way.
Yeah. Are we, wait, we're pitting all four against each other, or we were picking a best out of those three? It's all four here.
All four, yeah, all four.
That is a
Why
tough
not?
one. Oh, see, Curse of Fatal Death gives you the Master, it gives you Daleks, it gives you pretty much the essence of Doctor Who all in one story. You get it all, and you even get to you even get to cycle through all his remaining lives, in a brilliantly funny way, actually. But the other skits, like for instance, like we were saying, the web of caves, that one did the same thing, kind of. It gave you like the essence of the show. The Doctor stops the bad guys, and here are the bad guys going, "Come on, you got to stop us, man. Come on, can we hire you to do this?" Essentially. But I don't know. Before that, I was as much as I do love the kidnappers, just because of how it was, I was leaning toward the Pitch of Fear. There's something about that one. Every time I watch that one, it's just like I sit there and I want to believe that's how it happened. Even it's so ridiculous. Of course, we know it's not how it happened, but it would be so funny for a time travel show to have had its creators sit there and predict how it would have gone as if
Yeah.
they had known its future. And I guess for some reason that's where my enjoyment is coming from it. Just to think that possibility could actually be there, because imagine creating a show and you got to live long enough to see how long it really lasted, but then you could go back in time to have that meeting all over again, and this time you tell them, "I want it to go for 26 years." Just with out of all the other jokes that you could have done, just to go back to that meeting and instead of be that guy that where you're sitting there like, "Well, I think it's a good show. I think it could really work. You guys should do this." You can go to the meeting and go, "It'll last 26 years. I think we're going to have about, well, I don't know, seven different actors play the role. Trust me, it'll work. I've got it all figured out." All that confidence. It would be a very neat thing. So I don't know. I think I'm very taken with the concept of that one.
Okay. I think I'm going to go with the kidnappers. Kidnapping? Kidnappers?
Kidnappers.
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 Yeah, I'm going to go with the kidnappers. Purely for Peter Dave. Well, not purely for Peter Davison, but Peter Davison's presence and reactions
Yeah.
just raise it above the others for me, I think.
There's also that other great moment in there. Oh, you remember that time we said that we would stop by the Peter Davison's house in Belle's Isles Park, stuff him in the boot of a car, and chuck him? No. Well,
Yes.
yeah, good
Excellent.
point. That's a very good choice.
Yeah. So I'm going with that. Now that you can take those, dear listener, as our recommendations for this week.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You can just take them as recommendations. But if you want some more recommendations, we've got some massive competition on the recommendations front with last week's podcast. Thanks to Gareth being on. We had over 10 recommendations. Now, I'm not suggesting we do 10 this week. I suggest we maybe just do one or two each like we normally do. You okay with that?
So we're still doing recommendations on top of our recommendations.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, why not? We could do that. We're grown ups. We can think of something that we can recommend to our esteemed listener there who's sat there in his chair on the London Underground or the New York subway, assuming, James Bond or John McClane haven't been in action. They should be relatively safe. So, they're listening to us. They want to know what they're going to do tonight. What are they going to watch or read tonight? They need a recommendation. They can't watch the internet for 30 minutes. That's not good enough. They might be chortling at the end of it, but for Doctor Who spoofs isn't that's not a recommendation. That's just a just pass the time for 30 minutes before they go back onto Facebook. They don't want to be going back onto Facebook. They want something solid to do. Let's give it to them, Terranova. Let's give it to them.
Okay, you've won me over.
Okay. Am I
Relax.
going first or you?
You can knock yourself out.
Okay. Pass me that mallet. There we go. Okay. Recommendations. Do you know what? I'm really taken with the current issue of Doctor Who magazine.
Because.
It's got a stunning cover of Daleks and Santarans invading Earth. No, it's not Santarans. It's just Daleks invading Earth. Huge, huge Daleks invading the Earth front cover. Beautifully rendered. And but it's got two good features. Well, it's got it's two. Oh, there's ongoing features. There's an interview with Carol Ann Ford, in which she looks at Verity Lambert's press cuttings of Doctor Who. And recalls stuff. They're largely Verity Lambert kept lots of press cuttings about Doctor Who, even when she'd left the show, and she had cuttings about Carol Ann Ford. So she's mostly talking about those cuttings. They weren't purely about Carol Ann Ford. I don't think there was some sort of obsession there. There's other cuttings, obviously, but Carol Ann Ford is primarily talking about the cuttings about herself. Then there's also a feature on Doctor Who videos, which is called the Golden Era videotape, and this is the second portion, the second installment of that feature. But there is an interview with John Nathan Turner from 1988, or yeah, from 1988, I think, by a couple of students who had lost it, much like the John Pertwee one a couple of years ago, done by a couple of fans who'd forgotten that they'd made it for a fanzine. I can't recall whether it actually got used or not, but it is a really good read, and John Nathan Turner is really generous with his answers and his time. I think because he doesn't take them to be hardcore fans, basically. This is just after this business with DWB kind of being really rude and campaigning to have John Nathan Turner removed from Doctor Who. So the current Doctor Who magazine, the last few issues, while there's been no show on, have been really strong issues. I should add to that. So I think I have a problem with Doctor Who magazine when Doctor Who's on because it gets all a bit fluffy,
Yeah.
shall we say, and a bit hello or okay. Do you have okay in the US? I know you have hello in the US. Do you have okay in the US?
We have okay in the US. Wait, oh, the magazines. Oh, I see. Yes, I believe we do, yes.
It gets all a bit celebby for my liking.
Yeah.
So, and just fluffy and not really serious. I know there's only so much they can do in those scenarios, but yeah, it doesn't do it for me when the show's on. But in between series, yeah, this has been a brilliant run so far. So that's my first recommendation. My second recommendation, I would awfully like to give you one. But I don't think I've got a second recommendation really this week,
Oh,
because
good.
that
That
one was
makes me
kind of
feel better.
on the
Jeez.
fly, off the cuff. I just dragged it out of nowhere, that recommendation. So if Brian is ready for me to stop filling, I'll hand over to him for his recommendation.
Yes.
Good-o.
Let's do that. Yeah. Honestly, I probably only have one recommendation myself this week because I'm struggling like you to think of a second one. this one is actually going to be a bit of a surprise recommendation for me to be seeing that I'm recommending it because it's a TV show that I have tried to watch numerous times. It's been about 7 years since it started. It's over now. I've tried, honestly, I would say four times. And each time I just couldn't get into it. And I don't know what it was. This time I was like, people keep telling me it's good. I'm going to give it a solid go. And I realized I had seen like the first, what, three episodes of it. So I started with episode four and moved on from there, just trying to pick up where I was. And somehow it clicked with me. And it's a science fiction themed show, very heavily inspired by The X-Files, and it is Fringe.
Oh,
And
right.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I am aware of it. I've been intrigued by it, but I haven't actually got around to watching it.
I'll say what originally put me off was in the beginning. Like there's one character in particular. His name's Walter, and he's kind of the reason that. Sort of the reason that the stories are happening. He's kind of the show centers itself around, instead of the paranormal like the X-Files, it works around the idea of fringe science, which is like basically scientific theories, which really are just theories and not really taken as proper science, I guess, if you want to think of it that way. So it's all sorts of oddities in the science world, like travel to parallel dimensions, time travel, well, not really time travel. I don't know if they've done that yet, but cybernetics, all sorts of odd things that people are like, yes, we could, but probably not going to do that. But the premise of this character is that he was very heavily into it in like the 80s, the 60s through the 80s or so, and then went insane. And now, after 17 years of living in a mental hospital, we're seeing lots of what they're calling well, great. A pattern. They're calling it a pattern of all these kind of fringe science things happening. So they kind of need him to get out of the mental institution because he's sort of the expert on it so that they can track it down and kind of stop and figure out what's going on. It was sort of him in a way, as well as some of the other main cast that had kind of put me off. And this is going to sound rude because I got to, and I'll preface it right now by saying I was so wrong because he's brilliant. He plays the character so extremely well. In the pilot episode, I just felt that they were kind of trying too hard to make their characters characters rather than let them breathe on their own. But once I got a couple episodes in, everybody became really interesting. Yeah, I think there's only one of the FBI agents who kind of bored me a little bit, but the main character, the main FBI agent, she was great. Her name is Olivia Dunham on the show. Walter and his son Peter, they're great characters. Everybody is neat. The premise is really neat. I like the fact that while they were influenced by the X-Files, they found a direction of their own. They didn't go paranormal, they went with fringe science. So it's kind of similar. Rather than Mulder having so much resistance to people believing what he believes in his one-manned office, to once Scully gets there with the X-Files, Fringe Division is actually an actual unit set up by the FBI. They may not be well liked, but it's a massive unit that actually deals specifically with these patterns. So they borrowed a lot from there. They borrowed a lot from other sources as well, just like every other show, including the X-Files, had done. But the stories are great. They're unfolding very interestingly. Even I just got to the end of season one, and one of the facts that you learn really kind of like shocked me because I didn't expect it. It was a really neat thing. So I have to apologize to the show for all the years I just said I couldn't get into it because it's really damn good. So that's my recommendation, Fringe.
Okay.
I'm on season two. I don't see it going on a downswing. It's remaining very strong so far, so.
Okay, good. Excellent recommendation. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of this week's Castobus podcast with a K. Hopefully, there's been enough in there to inspire you, dear listener, to go and check out the Web of Caves and the Kidnappers and the other one. Pitch of Fear and Curse of Fate and the Curse of Fatal Death, Doctor Who spoofs from 1999. Amazingly, all four in the same year, from Comic Relief in 1999 for the Curse of Fatal Death, and the other three were from the special Doctor Who Night on BBC Two, hosted by Tom Baker. We will be back in a vague configuration of our usual personnel in next week's podcast, but until then, it's goodbye.
The Podcast with K, with Christian Holly, James McLean, and Brian Terranova.